like you do.
Exactly. So one of the first questions which was raised when the hot Jupiters were discovered was whether the atmosphere of the subject could be retained by the planet. And I will present you observations that we have made in the UV that reveal the upper part of the atmosphere of the planet, where the density is very low, and that reveals that those atmospheres can be escaping. You have heard, I think, many talks about observations of extrasolar planets transiting extrasolar planet atmospheres, where the signal to noise is very high and you have a very nice transit life curves. The transit life curves that I will show you are very scary. They are very few points and the signal to noise is very low. So if I know that there are many theorists here, so the observations that I will show you have to be taken very carefully. They are at 4 sigma levels. That's measurement, very, very hard measurement. I will show you why it's difficult. So just to tell you that before drawing quick conclusion, we should look at the observation. And that's what I will try to do today. I have 20 minutes to do that. So, very quickly, I will talk about which part of the atmosphere we probe with this observation. Then I will go directly to the observation of HD209458b. I will show how we have evidence, pieces of evidence that the atmosphere of this planet is hydrodynamically escaping. I will then show you a new detection that we have for second hot Jupiters, HD19733. I will talk about escape rates, lifetime of the subject, and towards the end of my talk, I'll talk about future observation, and you will see that it's a very active field, even if during the last year there was not a lot done, just because the only observations that we can do for this object are in the UV, and the only facilities that we have is the Hubble Space Telescope. And as you probably know, that this instrument, which observed in the UV with space telescope, was broken, and it has been repaired in the last servicing mission. So I will tell you what we can do now. So very briefly, from an observer viewpoint, very basically, the atmosphere is separated in two parts. The homosphere in the lower part of the atmosphere, where the convection, the diffusion, the collision create mix all the elements together, and the above, the heterosphere, where the elements are stratified by their mass. And the uppermost layer part is the exosphere, mainly composed of hydrogen atoms at very low density. And that's this skin of the atmosphere that we try to observe, and that is the region where the escape can the atmosphere can escape.
Jean-Michel, yes? Can I ask you where the classification comes from?
The homosphere?
Yeah, because you know, often people talk about the troposphere, stratosphere.
Oh yeah, that's very simple.
So where does that classification comes from?
Oh, that's very simple, basic part. What I just want to highlight is the upper atmosphere. So this classification, of course, that I'm not talking about stratosphere. I can show you this TP profile for HG209, for example. That has been compiled by Fortney. So the region that I'm probing is above the stratosphere. It's the top of the atmosphere, so the exosphere here.
So on Earth, that's called the thermosphere, where things can...
The thermosphere is below the exosphere. The exosphere is below the thermosphere, as far as I...
No, I don't think so.
So, so the thermosphere
is way beyond the exosphere. Below the exosphere is typically the thermosphere, where temperature goes up with altitude.
I guess it depends on the physical process you're interested in.
Yeah,
so if you tell us maybe if you're a microbar, that helps us know where you're talking.
Yeah, it's a
nanobar.
It's above the nanobar that I'm talking, so. So in the exosphere.
Okay.
I don't know.
I think it depends on the planet, the bar level.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I just want to make a very general introduction, and Maybe we can go deeper because the exobase level of this hot Jupiters is not like the exobase of the Earth, of course. So it can be even above the Roche-Lobe. So it depends what you define. The exobase above the Roche-Lobe for the Earth has no sense, for example.
The heterosphere in this context would just be the place where there's not enough mixing to counteract the natural tendency for light stuff to rise and heavy stuff to fall. You don't have that in stratosphere.
Right, but I don't understand what the physical process that would prevent this.
Well,
this is a physical process, but why is it that you would not have enough? So you're so diffuse that...
Well, it's just in the Earth you see this, in the Earth's atmosphere you see this. And that's why you were saying it's hydrogen, and in the Earth's atmosphere it's dominated by hydrogen, you get hydrogen. It's because that's what's left, and things do settle. And then the exosphere is where the mean free paths are left.
Right. Yeah.
Beyond the axial base, there's no collision. So if the particle has enough speed,
okay, so it's collisional.
So all my introduction is done just now, but it's fine. It's in the next slide that I will do all that, but no, it's fine. It's going very fast. That's good. So, yeah, just to mention briefly that last week, for example, Heather Knudson presented thermal emission observation, which are much below what we are observing now. We are probing where it's really not dense at all. And the transmission spectroscopy, for example, probe upper region. I just show you, for example, for this object, observations that we had obtained in the visible. From Heather-Knudson observation, we extracted the radius, wavelength-dependent radius of this planet. So what you see in histogram is a different radius of the planet as function of the wavelengths. The planet appears larger at 6,000 angstroms than at 5,000 angstroms. And what we try to probe, for example, here, it's the TIOVO, which is stratospheric, so which could be responsible from thermal inversions that are seen in the infrared. So there, for this observation, we have signal to noise, we can say things. Here, what we are trying to do is below, above the exobase, where the mean free path is equivalent to one scale height. There is no definition of scale height, of course, for the exosphere. But so that's where a particle who have enough energy could escape. For example, so we define actually the escape parameter lambda as the ratio of the potential energy over the kinetic energy. And if you have enough velocity below the exobase, the distribution is Maxwellian. And in the tail of this distribution, you have particles who have a velocity enough to escape. So those particles, depending on their inclination, could have a ballistic trajectory, a satellite trajectory, or can even escape. Of course, the main parameter of that is the temperature, and it's a diffusion-limited process. And most of the escaping atmosphere actually is non-thermal, it's not Jeans escape. For example, you have sputtering or charge exchange, which are very efficient processes. And I will talk to you about this effect that we have some indices also that we can see that on extrasolar planets. I suggest those two papers for more review. So I will talk now about observations. So the first observation that we obtained was in 2003. So we observed in the UV, of course, as I said. So the main difficulty is that there is no flux. Of course, the flux of the star is very low. But what you have is here, this big emission is a stellar chromospheric Lyman alpha emission. And you use that actually to probe the hydrogen in the upper part of the atmosphere. So the second major difficulty that there is that, of course, what we are looking is hydrogen, and there is a lot of hydrogen in the interstellar medium. So the part which interests you, which is the center part of the line, is mainly absorbed by the hydrogen. On top of that, you have a last difficulty, which is that what you try to look at is the hydrogen on an exoplanet, but there is also hydrogen on the Earth, on the Earth's exosphere. And even though HIC is at 7 kilometer altitude, 700 kilometer altitude, sorry, there is an airglow emission, sorry, that you can see in the 2D image. This is, here you have the spectrum of the star, so at Lyman alpha you have this spectrum. So here we just focused in this at Lyman alpha. So what you can do is to use this information, this spatial information, because you use a slit, you can use the spatial information to correct for the airglow. You have also oxygen airglow that I will show a bit later. So that's why those observations are difficult, and they are. But we can still overcome those difficulties. I will show you how. So what we did is that we summed the spectra during transit and out of transit, and if you compare the two spectra, you see that there is an absorption at the center of the line. We excluded here the, where the airglow could contaminate the observation.
This is one airlock.
This is three transit combined. And if you sum the totality of the line, you have you see 9% of absorption. But this Lyman alpha line can, stellar Lyman alpha line can vary over time. So what we use is the wings of the line to probe those variations. And when you do so, you have an absorption of 15% in the center of the line. Okay. So this, I remind that for G209, if you observe in the continuum, you see 1.6% of absorption. And if you fill up the Roche lobe of this planet with just hydrogen atom, you will see 10% of absorption. So since we see more than this, it means that we have hydrogen atom around the Roche lobe, above the Roche lobe. And if there is hydrogen atoms above the Roche lobe, they must escape. Another way to see it is that in the spectra that I show you here, we see absorption till above 100 kilometers per second. So it means that it's twice the escape velocity of the planet. So it means that hydrogen atom must escape. Okay? So we can, back of the envelope, make a quick calculation to estimate the escape rate. So if we consider that we have 15% and we are optically death at the Roche lobe level, we see that we could have 10 to the 3, 10 to the 4 atoms per cubic centimeter. And if we estimate roughly the temperature between 2000 and 20,000 Kelvin, which should be roughly at 10,000, we have a velocity between 5 to 15 kilometers per second, which give 10 to the 10 grams per second for the escape rates, which means that over the... This is a minimum value, of course, but that would mean that...
Can you try to assume this number in the 100 kilometers a second on the previous slide?
In between this number, the 100 kilometers there, and that's the thermal escape. That's just Jeans escape that gives you that.
What? Aren't you seeing the stuff coming out at 100 kilometers a second?
Yeah. So that's a minimum. That's thermal escape. That's that will give you five.
What I'm asking is why aren't you putting 100 kilometers a second into your escape rate?
No. R54. It's at the base of the planet, at 1.35.
The 100 is at the base?
Yeah.
But you're seeing the 100 at the...
54 is the escape speed at the base. You see some stuff at 100, but you only need whatever, 5 to 15 to get out the excess here.
That's just a thermal escape.
Yeah, okay. I thought you're measuring a density at the Roche lobe and a velocity at the Roche lobe, and you're using those two to get an escape.
Yeah.
That's not what you're doing. You're using 5 to 100.
Yeah, I could. You mean I should use 100 kilometers per second?
Just that's should be local.
Yeah. Okay. You're right. So it will increase that.
Well. Yeah. So if it increases by a factor 20, then it becomes 20% of the mass. That becomes interesting.
It's an important distinction.
Let me think. By 10. You said that it increased by a factor of 10.
Yeah, 10.
Okay, and you said
1%.
Yeah. Yeah, it's back of the envelope. I mean, it's really.
It might be 10 times more. That's what
the temperature. You see how we change the temperature, and this estimate is really roof and really it's should not be taken too carefully. I think.
So this line on an emission line.
Huh? Yeah.
Is that from the star or is that?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. So this Lyman alpha that you see is a stellar Lyman alpha. It's chromospheric. Okay. Sorry. And
now you have this huge exosphere and also the huge interstellar.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. How sure are you that what you see is really from the tail of this planet?
We are not sure, but what we see, it's three times, we have three transits, and during three transits, we see an absorption correlated each time with the transit.
Okay. Oh, there is a transition. Okay.
Yeah, it's a transit.
Okay. Thank you.
How can you use the wings as the reference? Shouldn't the absorption of the wings also change during transit?
You don't expect to have absorption so far. We don't expect to have absorption at 200 kilometers per second. So you consider that the only variation that you have in the wind is only the star.
Depends on what's absorbing in that, and what's not just hydrogen, but the other stuff as well.
Yeah. Okay. So the next step that we tackle, because we have been able to observe this upper atmosphere and see that it's probably escaping. So the next step was to see if we could observationally constrain the escaping mechanism. And what we did is, so we used the same technique. We went in the UV. We looked at low resolution spectra. So we find again the Lyman alpha emission, and we have a plethora of a line, and what we use is those again chromospheric stellar line to probe if there were heavier elements in the upper part of the atmosphere. So what we see is a continuum of the star, and if you add sum up the photon here, you find that it's in agreement with the ratio that the radius that you obtain in the visible, so that's kind of reassuring us. And so we looked at all those different lines. We didn't see any absorption, part of absorption in O1 and carbon 2. And that means that, we probably have, it's at 2 sigma level, 2 to 3 sigma level. So it's a very weak measurement compared to the hydrogen before. So that means that we see probably at the level of the upper atmosphere, we have some oxygen and carbon atom. I'll show you that. But since we have also Lyman alpha at low resolution, that was the observation that I showed before. We predicted that 15% of absorption over the Lyman alpha line gave us 5.7% at low resolution. So this is compared to the very high resolution here. And we measured 5.3%. So that's in a good agreement with what was predicted. So again, that seemed to confirm that our first observation shows that there is a huge cloud around this planet. So the two observations that I just showed now, we gather also a third observation with another instrument on board HIST, the SES instrument. I'll talk also a bit later about this observation, at least with HG189. So the signal to noise was very low with this instrument. It's just a prism that we have. There is no slit. And it's basically spectrophotometry on a large band. And Of course, it's very difficult to say anything, but we find an indice of an absorption of ECT plus or minus 6%. So it's.
Which one is a better number, 15 or
15? 15. I mean, they are equivalent, so.
They are?
So, yeah, I mean, that's true, different observations, okay. But.
So which one gives me the real size of the hydrogen cloud around it?
They are the same because the 15% are in the center part of the line. Uh-huh. The 5% is in the total part of the line.
But they're different resolutions.
They're different resolutions. So either you take 15% in the center part, mm-hmm. but depend at which velocity you're looking. So.
Right.
If you go to the extreme center of the line, and I will show a model, for example, from Ruth Murray-Clay, you go to one, you obscure everything, so you go to 100%. Okay? Maybe I can. So just to compare with what we have, for example, in the infrared. This is HD189733. That's a different one, but just to remind you that the precision that we have in the infrared is really different from this. So here, even the error bar, which are indicated, are photon noise error bar. So there might be systematic effects that we don't take into account, that we are not aware. Okay. So here is the observation that we have around the oxygen and carbon line. Interestingly, the oxygen is absorbed, also oxygen 1 is absorbed in the interstellar medium. So most probably what we see here, it's oxygen 1 star, oxygen 1 star star, which are excited by collision. So it means that we have collision at the upper level of the atmosphere of this planet. And the same for carbon 2. So basically, having oxygen and carbon at this level, you need a mechanism to carry them at this altitude. And that plays more in favor of hydrodynamical escape than just thermal escape. So that, again, it was a back-of-the-envelope calculation to have this oxygen one star star, you have to have this density at the level of the Roche lobe, and again, that gives you an escape rate of 10 to the 10, hopefully.
Have you guys looked at a similar type star, did the exact same observation of a similar type star that has no transiting planet?
No, it's a good point, yeah. We're, yeah, exactly, yeah.
With the same instrument.
Yeah, I understand. I can show you a plot which shows that the transit as function of the flux.
So, can I ask a basic question? I'm sort of. Is it that you have an extended cloud that's marginally optically, it's optically thin, or it's like a somewhat smaller cloud that's optically thick? Can you say?
We don't know that. Of course, high resolution spectroscopy can give you this information, and that's the next step. For now, we don't know if it's a large cloud, and we just know that we have 5% over the total line absorption.
But given that you have some knowledge of the velocity, and then it's not quite strictly spent.
Well,
could you use some model for the distribution of the density distribution, and therefore you would have.
Yeah. Although the knowledge of the velocity is at 2 sigma level compared to the absorption, which has 4, 5 sigma. So it's an indice, pieces of evidence, I don't know, but it
would be nice to be able to look at different wavelengths.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a new problem.
Right. That would tell you right.
Because the species are going to change, yes. They come and go, et cetera.
So there is no surprise in that talk, because all that I want to say at the end.
Sorry.
No, it's fine.
I mean.
I can stop now. Nearly. So there are several models which try to interpret the observation, so that's exactly what you said. And some of them try to use this information of the velocity, and that plays in favor of a tail. And so the first one was in the paper where we included the radiation pressure. So you include also a tidal effect from the from the star. And
can you explain a bit more in detail what kind of radiation pressure you're talking about?
Radiation pressure from a Lyman alpha photon.
Where do the photons come from?
From the star, from the stellar line. So what you have seen before was the chromospheric emission line. So there is photon which arrive on the cloud of hydrogen, mm-hmm. which have which.
So it pushes it away behind.
Yeah. 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 Exactly. And another model use the interaction between the escape gas and the stellar wind.
There's another calculation by Stone and...
yeah, exactly, yeah. So that's in my next slide. Thank you. No, but that's great. That's the two next slide after. It's maybe I should have restructured my talk differently. Yeah. No, it's fine. So there is also, I just want, before talking to Stone, but it's just one line for Stone, I don't... maybe you can talk about it. There is just the Ahlstrom et al. Paper which shows that there could be energetic neutral atoms which it's charge exchange with the neutral of the atmosphere. So that could create the speed that we see. And there is the paper recently from Ruth Merrickley which calculates just bulk hydrodynamic outflow. And I will show you just the next slide, result. But what is interesting is that all those results, so they all use XUV flux, but all those results agree roughly with the 10 to the 10 as a lower limit for the evaporation. So to answer your question before, here it's the result from Ross-Merrickley calculation. So they use heating and cooling, ionization balance, tidal gravity, and they even use the pressure confinement of the cloud with stellar wind. By doing that, they obtain this profile at Lyman alpha, so you absorb a lot in the center of the line. And here, overplotted, those vertical lines are the wavelength domains that we used in Vidal-Majar 2003. And so you see that you have a much lower absorption in this domain. So you should have 2.5% of absorption rather than the 15% which is seen in this wavelength domain. So this is mainly due to the fact that, first, this has not been convolved by the PSF of the instrument. So since it's very sharp here, you should have absorption in a larger band. Secondly, there could be effects like we have seen, stellar wind, radiation pressure, that create the absorption shifted from the central wavelength. Okay, they also show that it's a mass loss, that the mass loss is energy limited.
What does that mean, the FUV
0.9
minus
FUV? Yeah, so that depends on the age of the star. When the star was a tertiary, was younger, you scale the FUV flux to a factor of 0.9 power. And when it's older, the star, it's more 0.6. So they use different age of the star.
Is that because the stellar UV spectrum?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
So this being in the line center, that this wind is large enough that it occults the entire star?
Yeah. If there was no interstellar medium, for example, we would be able to see that kind of, that would be great because we could be able to see the center of the line. And here it's totally blocked.
So. One more question, that the 0.6, what age does that correspond to?
This is the current age, I think. The current age of the star.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very old?
It's two gigahertz.
Current age? Oh, I see.
Yeah. Oh, it's 3.2 gigahertz.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
I see.
That's the central value.
So there has been several models to understand the escape rates. I will not go through that list. Very early when the how Jupiter was discovered, there is this paper from Adam, and Adam was mentioning this paper also But all those papers use deposit XUV flux in the thermosphere, in the upper atmosphere, to heat up those objects. So, what has been done is that we can position all the planets known by radial velocity here and transit. It was in 2007, so a lot of planets are missing, in an energy diagram. So you have the potential energy of the atmosphere function of the UV flux of the stars. Basically, it can be seen as the mass of the planet as function of the orbital distance.
Where do you get the UV fluxes from?
So that has been scaled from different. So if you look at the Cavalier paper, they show that used from different observations. So there is X observation, X-ray observation that you scale.
For every one of these.
Yeah, not for every one of these. Yeah, some of them are from X observation. The other are scaled from far UV observation. So it's different. They have different. So in this diagram, the line, isochrone line here, are you can have the escape rate of the planet. And what is interesting is that you don't find a planet which would totally evaporate in less than 5 gigahertz. And in this region, you have several planets where, when they are transiting, the absorption could be seen, the clouds could be seen.
So in that empty quadrant, though, if I just took field stars, how would they lie here? Like, should I expect to find
a planet
there, or are there just not enough stars that have been looked at?
No. You should find them. Sorry. Here they are very easy to find, those objects. If they would exist, actually they would be found already. So we have a gap of planet here. And for example, this gap is just due to the radial velocity limitation. Smaller planets at far distance are difficult to find. But here, like massive planets close by are very easy to find, and we don't find them.
This is 07, now 2 years later.
Yeah.
Same picture here.
Yeah, roughly it will not change. You have more planets here, maybe. And interestingly, you have planets at this level.
How about the upper left corner? Do you have more samples to fill that?
Here, there is more massive one, yeah. In that region?
Between 10 to 10 and 10 to 12, the two
lines. I don't think so. Yeah. There might be more here, but here, I don't think so. But interestingly, there are more planets here. Coro, Kepler targets will be also announced. And those objects could be actually remnants of those hot Jupiters, which have lost their atmosphere. And you will find them more at this level. So the next question following that diagram is that are there other evaporating Jupiters? So we looked at HD189733, which is the next Jupiter interesting. As I said, we used the SES because TIS was not available. And so SES is an instrument on board HIST, which uses a prism. So that is the spectrum that you obtain. Here you have Lyman alpha. This is a 2D image. You have Lyman alpha. You have no slits. So all the air glow diffusion that I showed you before is spread everywhere in the background. So you have to correct it properly. This is a model of the image that, we obtain. Here is the spectrum that we obtain. So between one and so here you have Lyman alpha, sorry, oxygen and carbon. So you see the oxygen and carbon line here. And of course, again, we use the same technique. We tried to look in all the species if we see any absorption. We just saw absorption in the Lyman alpha line. I will just show you the result. But interestingly, here we can use all the photons here, combine them, and we find 2.7% absorption in agreement with the 2.4% absorption in the visible. So that secures our observation at Lyman alpha, where you have nearly the same count of photons. And So here's the three transits that we gather. Of course, we are used to nice transit life curve, but here the we see each orbit, four HIC orbits, sorry.
2.7% absorption.
2.7% absorption.
Okay. And isn't that fairly close to what you see in the optical?
Yeah.
Okay, so.
That's the black body of the star.
Okay, maybe I should.
That's the black body of the star. So you expect to see that actually in the continuum of the star. So we have three transits. So what we see here, the gap are when HIST is behind the Earth, of course. So we measure independently the three transits. So we see different absorption depths each time we come back. Sorry, I don't know if you see. But if we combine all that, we obtain 5% absorption depths plus or minus roughly one.
What are the long time slopes?
Yes. Sorry?
What are the long time slopes?
So this slope, yeah, it's a very good question. The slope can be the Lyman alpha variation. Here we are at low resolution, so we can't. We do basically spectrophotometry in the Lyman alpha line. So we can't use the wing like we did at high resolution. So we can't probe the variability of the stellar line.
So they're determined from the slope, the long-term trend is determined from those points.
Yeah.
As part of the fit.
Yeah, it's part of the fit, but yeah, it's very difficult measurement. And so we obtain from the baseline, we obtain a measurement at C sigma. And from what is seen is in the visible, it's at 3 sigma level.
It would be nice to flash that same thing without the lines. Some of those are not so convincing.
Actually, I want to ask, how did you pick your observing strategy? You wanted to see the egress and.
That's what we try to have, yeah. And so we had five orbits, the first one we removed it. It's difficult to have five orbits, so on those two one we had five orbits, on this one we had four orbits. The first orbit each time is removed because the observation behaved badly. And what we tried is to probe also the tail of the transit, because that's what we were interested in, to see if we could see the tail. And as I will show you here, that's a transit life curve combined. So I could just have showed that and you would not have seen the ramp. But combine the transit life curve. So if you fit that you find 10 to the, with a model which take into account, like before, the radiation pressure, you obtain 10 to the 10 grams per second for the escape rates. But if you use, for example, solar FUV, you won't see that tail. So that's one thing that you could rule out, at least, is this big tail. And you have this the best fit, which is the dark light curve.
Okay, so those different lines are the different models that are represented down the bottom left.
Yeah.
Okay, and so a model that has 10 to the 10 grams per second with the EUV from the sun is very different from the data.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you have, but this object probably doesn't have FEUV.
Yeah, it has probably, yeah.
Solar.
No.
So what do you get?
In between.
Yeah, what do you get with the data for the mass loss rate at one time solar?
You get 10 to 7 grams?
Yeah, it's lower, yeah, of course, yeah.
Well, but that's
yeah, we don't, yeah, you're right, we should.
Solar, yeah, so maybe you get 10 to 5?
So nice,
yeah, I think it's something like 10 to the 7, 10 to the 6.
Okay, that's important.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So maybe 10 to 7 grams per second, so it's 1% of what you're seeing from HD209.
Yeah, I don't know if I put it.
It would be nice to try to resolve that issue.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah, the next slide. I understand how to link the mass loss rate to the observed attenuation of the flux. But how does that EUV place into this?
The radiation pressure.
Oh, you use the radiation pressure model.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
And why is there, so you have different shapes, right? Like the solid line is a different shape than...
It's a cloud behind.
You have a clear shape.
Yeah, yeah. That's what we try to constrain with this. So for HD209, we have a hint of that there is a cloud behind. For this one, there don't seem to be a cloud using one solar FEV. So again, there is those two scenarios, that scenario that I showed before. Either you consider that it's 5% over the full line, and in that case, you are above 150 kilometers per second, so above the escape rate.
I just want to make sure.
Sorry.
The radius you're getting in the ultraviolet is 1.38 Jupiter radii.
Yeah.
Okay. And for HD209, it was 4.3 Jupiter radii.
That's continuum, right? Yeah.
4.3, that was for the Roche lab.
Right, but wasn't that what you were getting? The Roche lab was 2.5 for HD209 or something like
is
that.
Is it?
4.3 is the effective radius that you were observing.
Yeah, yeah, that's...
So it has to be larger.
Yeah.
So I just want to make sure that 4.3 for HD209, 1.38 for 189.
Yeah. Okay. No, 1.38 is invisible. 2.28.
Is it really that large?
Yeah. Yeah. It's that.
The original measurement didn't have a radius that
is
large
it?
From the optical.
That would make it one of these inflated Jupiters, right?
1.15 Jupiter.
Okay, maybe I made a mistake. Yeah.
1.15.
Okay, I will double check. Okay. Yeah. So that's a mistake. Sorry.
That's important as well.
Yeah.
2.4% for HD189 would make it like the optical, because that has one of the biggest optical deficits in transit, because of the small flux in the star. Sorry, it would be nice to get
Sorry, I think there is a typo.
Are these stars, the planets co-rotating? They always show the same side to the star?
Supposedly, yeah.
And then on the back side, they are cool, I suppose. And it's only on the front side that you have this evaporation.
Is
addressed this.
Yeah, I think some paper shows that it's
a which moves the energy all around.
The
point of some
there's
energy.
No UV flux on it, I would say.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. So we can't address that observation, of course, but...
It looks very much like these evaporating companions of millisecond.
Like we know, like we know pulsars.
For the brown dwarf companion.
Okay, so again, if we just focus in the center of the line, then we will have 30% of absorption. The same thing as HD209. So either you have, over the whole line, you are above the escape velocity, either you are in the center of the line, and then you have a large cloud. Okay. Are there other better instruments? So we try to look with HST COS for HD189. This is just a quick result that I have plot, and I'll show you. So this is what we obtain. So you see the strong Lyman alpha emission and the chromospheric emission line. If we zoom on the Lyman alpha emission here, we have three orbits, 1, 2, 3, and several exposures per orbit. So this is a 2D image that we obtain. And this time, COS use a pinhole and not a slit. So that's why you have no, you cannot correct for the airglow using the spectrum above and below. You have no spatial resolution. So that is the main difficulty, especially you see that the shape of the Lyman alpha is changing. So you can't use COS a priori, unless you can correct properly for the airglow, to do that kind of studies. So we change our program to STIS. So we looked also at the oxygen line whiskers. So we see very nicely those oxygen lines compared to before. But there is also air glow lines in this emission line. So again, the same problem as Lyman alpha. The only line is the carbon 2 lines that you could use a priori. So we plotted what we obtained. So we can't say we can't say anything. Yeah, we can't say anything. We decided to go back to STIS at medium resolution to at least have the hydrogen, to probe the hydrogen of the planet.
Are there useless observations of MOS 12b?
No, not to my knowledge. Not now, but Cycle 18 was just 2 weeks ago. And I suspect that several people have put that. Which I would have done, but we have talked about that. There is for HD209 Linsky et al. Paper in preparation, or I don't know. But from what we have seen before, I suspect that the information will be in the carbon 2 line and not in the Lyman alpha. But if they can see properly the carbon 2 line at 1334 angstrom, it means that you can really constrain the hydrodynamical escape of the atmosphere. So you
it cannot be Jeans escape.
It's the hint at 2 sigma that we have. You can have it maybe at 5 sigma, 6 sigma here, maybe more. I don't know.
I don't know many planets that have shown Jeans escape.
True.
Right, okay.
But
some people would claim maybe it's genes, but you cannot do it with carbon. Right?
This is a Kevin France et al. Paper compared to what we obtain. What we obtain at low resolution, so here it's at high resolution, high sensitivity. So what we will be able to do in the future, if we use the COS, is to probe the carbon 2 line. So that could be interesting. And maybe the Linsky. Yeah, there are maybe other lines that Linsky et al. Will probe, and I'm very impatient to see that. Very quickly, what's next? So we have a program on HIST with STIS to look this time at higher resolution, to look for heavier elements. But this time we go in the near UV where there is more flux from the star, and there is many iron lines. So what we can do is derive the vertical density distribution and to extract a temperature at the upper level. And to confirm if we see higher metallic elements in the upper part of the atmosphere. Okay, so this program should be done by the end of the year. I think I don't have so much time. Sorry. We put also other proposal to probe the upper atmosphere, but for lower mass planets. That's very interesting. Feng did a great work on evaporating atmosphere of planet Earth, super Earth planet around M-dwarf in their habitability zone. So basically, JG1214 is not right away in its habitability zone, but the aim is to probe the upper atmosphere and to see if the atmosphere has been stable, if it's an hydrogen-rich atmosphere. So this is JG436. We obtained one spectra to test this observation. This is a 2D image on the spectra. I don't know if you see in gray, you have the HD209 observations. So we have more flux from JG436. It's closer, so there is less extinction from the interstellar medium. So it's more interesting to probe the center part of the line.
What
else
is it?
JG436?
Yeah.
It's a Neptune-like planet, hot Neptune.
How close?
19 parsec.
19. Is it within the inside of the
heptagon? No. It's a hot Neptune.
Yeah. 600 Kelvin.
we also, David Ehrenreich wrote a proposal also on a survey at Lyman Alpha. So that's the main transiting planet. This is the energy diagram that we showed before with the transiting planet. And all the color of the planet are those planets that we will try to probe in the UV with this. Okay, and a last one, which we have talked also before, is a program from Greg Loughlin. I saw that, we saw that in his blog. The interesting things of this target, it's an eccentric one, which transit, but this planet is in the continuous visibility zone of HIST, so you can just stare at the stars and have a full transit. The idea here is to see the exosphere getting larger because it's getting closer to the stars. So you should measure radius, which is time dependent for the planet. And if there is a tail, you should be able to see it. So it's a very nice proposal, and I hope it will be accepted.
You can see the time dependent during the transit.
Yeah, during the transit, you should see the radius increasing. So you should have a transit life curve which has which become larger and larger.
Where did they get the prediction on how the exosphere changes time?
Well, I think what they pick up is a planet which was in the CV zone.
So there's just no detailed calculation that
we don't know because nobody
has seen
the proposal.
It's just on their blog. There is no paper on that.
Like the idea.
It's an idea that they have submitted. Yeah, I think it was a good idea. So,
in your opinion, based on your experience and the quality of data you've been able to achieve with this, is this possible?
You're in the pack, and I put some proposal. I think this proposal is much nicer, this one, than the 340.
But you had a ramp that you had to fit out.
Yes. No, I think it's a very good idea. Yeah, it's a very good one. Yeah, I think it's a very good idea.
I think it's a great idea, but I don't think it's possible with those data.
I think it's possible.
Why is it impossible?
To detect a change in the
maybe that will be difficult, but what you can have, it will be the best one probably to have a continuous observation of the exosphere, which you don't have for any other planet. But one of the rare ones where you can have that.
So high enough cadence.
Yeah. And so continuously, which, for example,
I don't even know if they propose just a transit or they propose around. They might have proposed around.
They might have proposed around. They can. So
they can only get it in every 50 minutes.
Sorry? No, it's in the continuous zone.
It's in the continuous.
Yeah, that's why this target is more interesting than.
They probably are looking at beyond the transit.
I didn't realize.
Yeah, otherwise they could have looked at HD Ecto 6, for example, O6, which would be very interesting. But you have and.
Yeah, I didn't realize.
Yeah, it's very good. And now the one of the difficulty also that I did not mention is that in our observation, each time we have break, you know, because HIST is behind the Earth. So all those breaks bring probably some systematics effects that we don't take into account because we don't know them. So you come back on a different part of the detectors, and we see in the infrared that it's a huge problem. But here, we don't have any clue. So it's difficult. So if you have no break, then you can probably correct for better for systematic.
You're in a continuous viewing zone. Do you have, is the geochronal Lyman alpha?
We'll be there.
It's still the same screen?
Yeah, of course. It will be there. But it's, and I think I will finish my talk here. I think we talked already about that. So, about the remnant, the main idea here is that some of the hot Neptune that we see and that small planet that Koro and Kepler see could be potentially the remnant of the evaporated planet, that hot Neptune which would have evaporated and live with their core mass planet. Thank you.
Now in the atmosphere of a giant planet, I mean, you will have a lot of heavy elements in the atmosphere itself, and depending then on the evaporation mechanisms, these elements might stay or might get of kind of concentrated?
As we have seen for oxygen and carbon, we see them in the upper atmosphere, which means that they are carried by the flow of hydrogen, maybe at the sonic speed. So you have to carry them there because they should not be there. They will just down and settle.
This depends now on the mechanism of the evaporation, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's why we try to constrain absorption.
It should be replenished. The base, the atmosphere gradually adjusting to this loss.
Or over time, or long time, the concentration of the heavy elements may go up with time, may increase. Because the heavier they are, the less efficiently it should be carried away by the hydrogen. But I don't know if that's observable, though.
What would
say if you reduce Jupiter's mass by 50%, can you observe its heavy elements concentration? I don't know. Maybe not. From so far away.
Mm. You're talking about the same effect that makes Venus very deuterium rich, or things like that.
Right. Yeah. But that's reducing the water by almost from ocean water to zero.
Escape.
Mm. Yeah.
I think the effect is small, and it's already had a few billion years to do that. There's obvious evidence for heavy elements to catch.
In the solar type stuff, most of the energy comes out in the optical and not in the far ultraviolet. And so what does the optical flux do? On Earth, the optical flux gets to the surface and then it's re-radiated as infrared, and you get a huge greenhouse effect and heating. And so what does the optical flux
do? That's what I try to show in this. It's observation in the optical, so from 4,000 to 8,000 ocean.
Okay.
So you have the absorption depth, so the radius of the planet, which vary as function of the wavelengths. And what we try to see if there is a high altitude absorber that would absorb the flux and create a thermal inversion in the stratosphere. And that's so yes, you absorb, supposing you absorb the flux.
Where do they get the model for the atmosphere on that lot top left?
I don't know, actually.
That looks like
I don't take it seriously. For me, it's just a view like that. Because I don't know why
the exosphere and that plot come from.
I don't know. I think it's just a draw.
Well, it varies with the solar cycle, right? And then it goes way up.
No, this is this for HD2 and F of
DAC. It's supposed to be for G29. I don't know where they get
it. Not here.
Wow. Okay.
And I just want to know where that came from. I've never seen it, and I think it's just a sketch.
Because you don't
get the sketch.
Why would you? Yeah, you don't. You expect to be more isotonic.
Yes.
What is the ionization?
The temperature is way off at millibar. It's off by, well, you got to see the scale.
It's not about
it. No, I'm looking at a millibar.
Can you get to the previous slide?
Yeah, previous slide. Right. Yes.
10,000. That's fully ionized.
That's not a model.
I don't know what is that.
That's a sketch.
I would not pay too much maybe attention.
Well, coordinates, that makes it a plus.
You're still measuring the escape rate of hydrogen atoms.
Yeah.
But at those temperatures, most of the hydrogen should be ionized.
Yeah, that's true. At 10,000.
So aren't you worried that your 10 to the 10 should be in total bulk? 10 to the 12, and then
yeah,
significant.
Yeah, it's a lower limit, as I said.
But, yeah. Yeah, but then your 1% is.
Yeah. I know that you. Yeah, but even every model gives a 1%, it's a lower limit, what they give.
Well, but you shouldn't trust theorists too much. They know what answer they want to get, right?
So I put 10%.
I'm sure there'd be just as many papers, they'd be saying different things.
But you're totally right, yeah.
So, back to the question of Lyapunov variability in the star, and the fact that you haven't been able to do this control experiment by observing a non-system with a non-transiting planet. There are other lines that are sensitive to chromospheric activity, like calcium HEK, that you could observe from the ground continuously at this
position?
To see what.
Yeah, there's wood et al. In 2005.
I'm not saying that calcium HEK is the perfect.
They try to see correlation between not calcium, not Lyman alpha, but magnesium line, magnesium 2, and calcium HNK to see correlation.
This becomes more important when you go to later type stars like HD1973. We already know is spotty. It's not a stable star.
Yeah.
And GJ436 is even later type. So the assumption is that the Lyman alpha is stable.
Yeah, of course.
At the same level for all three.
But we don't make this assumption for HD209 because we use the wings. So that's why you go at higher resolution to correct for this variability. And that's true that when you are at low resolution, you don't correct for this variability.
How much variability do you see?
So I can show actually.
The Lyman alpha probes a pretty large region of the stellar chromosphere, I guess.
There are history winds, but this is going to change the whole picture.
So just because the wings are stable doesn't mean the core is stable.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but here you can't have everything because the core is absorbing the planet. Okay, you monitor the stars, the core of the star for a long time. So this is let's say the in and out, which is the wings of the stellar flux as a function of the transit ratio that we measure, and we don't see correlation between what we measure. So those points are very transit and those points are out of transit. Of course, we have very few points, but we don't see a correlation between the flux and the transit. Yes.
Can you summarize again what mass loss rate you think you're seeing from HD189?
Okay, it's more 10 to the 8, 10 to the 7, 10 to the 7, 10 to the 8.
All indications are it's lower.
Yeah, it's lower
than HD209.
Yeah. Yeah. Although the Lyman alpha flux is higher in HD189. What we observe, now the flux of the stars, Lyman alpha flux of the stars, is larger for HD189 than in HD209, but still. So 10 to the 7, 10 to the 8 gram per second escape rate that we obtain is smaller than 10 to the 8.
What about substellar UV fluxes? Is that also higher? I have to put in the radiant.
No, it's just a Lyman alpha flux, which is.
Is this planet much small, much bigger than HD209-4?
I'm sorry, when you say flux, you mean the actual flux in the detector, you don't mean the luminosity from the star?
I don't mean the luminosity, it's a flux.
Flux in the detector, of course. Yes.
Is it much bigger than, the second transiting and the first transiting?
Much bigger than what
you mean? In terms of mass. It has a much bigger gravity.
No.
I don't see why, it receives more photons than
I can't answer this question.
Mass.
I can't answer this question. But I don't know neither why. I would have expected.
But it's a radiation pressure model, right?
No, but that should not be the problem. That should not be the problem. It's still, you should have a larger absorption. Whatever you assume for the model.
So I was thinking when I asked it, so you remember I asked one question, I showed the slide to show how you can fit the data with a combination of FEUV and mass loss rate. And so how does the FEUV go into your consideration? Is that it's radiation pressure?
Oh, you just deposit all the XUV and you consider that there is an efficiency of one, that you use all this energy to escape the atmosphere.
Then the FEUV should be linked to the mass loss rate.
So it comes in two places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, the second place is how the radiation pressure changes the configuration of the cloud.
Yeah. But in this situation of HD189 should not be the problem. Because you have no resolution of that. Of that effect.
But, So in your modeling of the light curve, what do you use for the limb darkening or grass limb brightening for the star?
There is nothing, which is a good point. The star has a limb brightening in the, yeah, the sun, in the UV. And for now, there is nothing because we don't think we have the sensitivity to see such a variation. So it's very basic.
But you're trying to use the ingress and egress to constrain this shape of the asymmetry.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, it's that's what you use. You know, the we don't use ingress and egress information from this observation. You fix them from the visible. You know them. So
I see. It's weird asymmetric light curve.
Oh, that's the tail.
Yeah.
That's not the ingress. That's the tail of the hydrogen atom.
Yeah, I mean,
it's the shape is not determined by the limb darkening, it's by the shape of the cloud.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. Does the radiation pressure, or does the model that you have used with the radiation pressure, does it kind of produce a selective effect on the species you would see in the exosphere?
Yes, it should be, but we just apply it to hydrogen atom.
Yes.
But it should be. You're right.
Only hydrogen has.
Yeah.
It's an absorber in the only.
Yeah, because that's what we see.
Okay.
It's hydrogen.
Okay.
But you're totally right. For the carbon and oxygen, it should be applied, but.
But it hasn't been done.
Yeah, because it was up to sigma level, so we couldn't constrain this observation. But that's totally right.
So. Can you just list the projects you know you'll be looking at using this and BOSS for these types of phenomena in the next
year? Don't answer that.
Can you list those that you know that other people should know because they're on a web page?
So maybe the only things you have to just go to the Greg Loughlin's blog and you have the information.
So there are at least three or four of you guys.
I was on a TAC panel that saw lots of these in cycle 17.
And I suspect that cycle 18 might have even more of them. From what I know, there was several proposals.
Cycle 17.
18 is this time.
It's a long cycle, Lewis. It's still as long as.
Oh, you mean in cycle 17, which has been accepted?
Yeah.
That's your question.
Yeah.
Oh,
something you can talk about.
Okay. There is observation in the UV, but it's a near UV, which is for the WASP planet. I think it's WASP 12, as you may know, and the WASP 19. And 17, sorry, 17. WASP 17. That near UV. No, at Lyman Alpha, there has not been observation planned for cycle 17, not to my knowledge. So.
Did someone try using fuse for this?
Just because at that time, cycle 17, STIS was not repaired. And we were not so sure that STIS will be repaired, because it was quite low in the list. But now that STIS has been repaired, you can go back to that kind of studies. So maybe several people ask for COS observation at Lyman Alpha. Which I don't want to destroy the program, but just to say that there are difficulties. So either they switch on STIS.
You mentioned geochoronal.
Yeah. Or either we learn how to create that effect. But still, I think it will be difficult.
I don't know, but the whole point was that you can't use H alpha, but you can use the metal lines with COS.
Yeah, exactly. You could use carbon too.
That's what I hadn't realized.
On other lines, yeah. Probably other lines where there is no air glow.
Other comments? We're being told that it's chocolate time.
Chocolate time.
You take these chocolates with you.